Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Hey, welcome to Revitalize and Replant. I am Mark Clifton. I am here in Linwood, Kansas. We're doing a group of podcasts here in Linwood at the Linwood Baptist Church. Check us out at linwoodsbc.com. It's a replant. Started with three people in 2020. By the grace of God, average somewhere between 60 and 100 now, and doing a great thing in a little town of 400 people. And I'm here with Mark Halleck.
Hey, what's up?
Who is from Inglewood, Colorado. And down at the end of the table, running the board, is our good friend Kyle Bierman. And
Faithful Kyle.
He is from Lubbock, Texas. And so we are all three here together. Yep. Around this table. We've had enjoyed some great barbecue in Kansas City today.
Dude, what? Okay, and tell these folks real quick about what we ate. Because I'm still in shock about whatever we experienced.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Okay, I'll give them a little bit of a plug. It's, if you're in Kansas City, it's the initial L and the initial C, LCs. It's a little sort of out-of-the-way place. It's legit, real barbecue.
Oh, man.
We had a slab of ribs. Mm. We had some burn-ins. We had some pork. We had some brisket, we had some ham, we had some beans.
Really good beans.
We had some fries, and we had some onion rings.
We sampled a lot of different things.
We sampled a lot of different things.
And it was incredible.
It was good.
Man.
So we ate well here in Kansas City. More barbecue joints per person in Kansas City than in any city in the entire North American continent. And last night, you and Kyle went and played pickleball.
We did. We played pickleball, Kyle, and we sweat really bad. We are old men who think we're 18, but we're not
And I
anymore.
Think you're going to go play pickleball again
tonight. I think we are. I think we need to sweat off that barbecue.
Yeah, so more pickleball. So now that people have turned this off this was already a bad podcast and it's gotten worse.
Well, here's where we're going.
Where are we going?
We're talking deacons.
Deacons.
Oh, I love deacons.
Deacons.
I love talking about deacons.
We're talking about deacons.
And last episode, we talked about five marks of a faithful, godly deacon.
Go over them again.
I will.
One more time.
Mark number one was a love for God. They've got to love Jesus and want to bring glory to God. Number two is a love for people. Number three is humility. Number four is flexibility. And number five is sacrifice. And I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to the first episode, go back. But today we're going to be talking about...
And maybe send that out to your deacons to listen to.
That's right.
All right?
Yes. That's our hope, is we want to help.
It is our hope. And we did say, we think every church needs deacons.
That's right.
You may have elders, but you can have elders and deacons.
That's right. Two different offices.
You need deacons.
That's right, that we see in the New Testament.
Absolutely.
And so today we're going to talk about five of the duties of a deacon, or what do we do with deacons? And the first thing is this. Clifton, I'm going to throw it to you. And I think this is basic, but it's foundational. Deacons are the lead servants of the church. They're not the only servants.
Right.
We're all called to serve,
okay,
but they're the lead servants.
And I think sometimes when you show up as a pastor, you inherit deacons. It's a little bit like a head coach in NFL inheriting his assistant coaches.
That's true.
Okay?
That's true. That's
you
true.
You got a defensive line coach, you've got an offensive coordinator, you've got a defensive back coach, and they know how to do it, and you show up as the new head coach. And so I'm going to be honest.
They've got a system.
I realize that when you show up at a church, the deacon's already there. Mm. And they've got a system, and they've been running that system.
Yep.
So I know when we're doing this little, you know, little podcast, little hobby podcast that Mark and I do, and we think we know it all, we're not at, you know, Mount Moriah Baptist Church out in rural Tennessee with six deacons, three of them who've been there since right after the Civil War. I mean, I realize you're going to walk into a situation like that where they have some pretty strong opinions of what deacons do.
Right.
And you, as maybe a 30-year-old pastor, you're going to have a pretty hard time sometimes changing their opinions of what deacons do. So, with all of that said, go back and listen to a podcast we did on shepherding and take a few years and just love those deacons. And don't come in there right away and tell them they're doing it all wrong and you know how to do it and you're going to change it. Love those deacons. Yep. Find out what their strengths are. Find out what their weaknesses are. You got to deal with the ones you have to begin with, all right?
That's true.
And these changes we're talking about, they may need to be made very slowly and incrementally. And frankly, if you'll take a long on-ramp, 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, maybe you kind of just have to deal with the deacons you have right now. Mm-hmm. But as you bring on new ones, right?
Yep.
Bring on these kinds of new ones.
That's
Begin slowly to put this new DNA into these deacons. Now, the older deacons you have now may be willing to be taught.
Yeah.
They may be just waiting for you to come and teach them. Man, that's great.
Yeah.
God, but here's what I would suggest again, guys. You've got an associational missionary there that loves you and cares for you. If I were a new pastor, I would go talk to that director of missions and say, what do you know about the deacons mm-hmm. here in my church? Because mm-hmm. if it's in a relatively small association, he's going to know who those deacons are. And he's going to be able to give you a good insight of how you might could work with those deacons.
Yeah.
So you want to be real careful. I remember one time a guy went in and he saw the deacons were really not doing any kind of ministry at all. They were serving as a board of directors for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as ministering to the flock, it wasn't happening. So he came in with the notebooks and the projects, and he said, we're going to do deacon family ministry. And they looked at him like a cow looking at a new gate. Like, what in the world is deacon
what
family
is
ministry?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to divide the church up into mm-hmm. different families, and each of you is going to have a family this year that you're going to minister to throughout the year and report on it. Again, they looked at him like a cow looking at a new gate. So he passed it all out. He announced it to the church. Everybody's going to get a new deacon. And so later that year, he asked one of the church members, he said, how's the deacon family ministry going? He said, I don't know. My deacon's kind of like my secret Santa. Every now and then I get a message from him, but I don't really know who he is. So you can't just show up
no, that's right.
and lay something on them. So you may have to do this over time, slowly, but here's what you need to get to when you get to deacons.
Yeah.
I just wanted to put that caveat
out there.
No,
I think that's so good. I think that's
right?
exactly right.
Because we know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But here's the direction you want to take.
That's right.
Go
that's
for
right.
It,
yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And the first thing that you want to help them understand is that they are the lead servants of the church, which means this, and I love what you said. You know, when I came to Calvary, we had two deacons who were there and been there for years, and they were two sweet guys. I praise God for that. But they never met together. There were no meetings. There was no vision for anything like that. And it took us 3 years to build.
There you go.
3 years to kind of rebuild, win the trust of those two, and then rebuild our deacon ministry into a solid ministry of 10 deacons, where there was alignment, there was unity, there was clarity. But at the base level, I had to help them go back to the Word and say, guys, here's the bottom line. If there's one thing that we need out of the deacons in this church, it's that they are servants, and they're the lead servants of this church.
And we talk a lot about deacon is not only a noun, it's a verb.
Mm-hmm.
It's something not only you are, but it's something you do.
You do. Right. That's right. So that's number one. Number two is this. Deacons, we're talking about five duties of a deacon. The second one is the deacons joyfully assist the pastors. And this is where I would take us to Acts chapter 6. I think Acts chapter 6 gives us a prime example of how pastors and deacons are called to work together to serve the needs of the church. And oftentimes we'll say the pastor elders are responsible primarily for the spiritual needs of the flock. Deacons are there to help oversee and care for the physical needs of the flock. But I think what we see in Acts 6 is really this beautiful picture of pastors and deacons working together. I really feel strongly about this. These should not be two separate lanes where the pastors are doing one thing and the deacons are doing a completely other thing. We're called to work together to care for God's people. And so part of that, I think, are deacons assisting the pastors in different ways as needs come up in the congregation. And there are a lot of different needs that can come up in the congregation. So that's a second one. Here's a third duty of a deacon, and that is the deacons help to facilitate God-honoring worship.
Right.
worship.
How does that happen?
Well, here's what I would say, and you could speak to this better than me, but I've seen a lot of churches where the primary thing deacons do is maybe help with the Lord's Supper, which is good.
Sure.
Helping to prepare the Lord's Supper and things like that. And that's really important. But I would say this. I think as servants, deacons can be really helpful in helping to facilitate just all of Sunday morning, an environment where worship can happen. And so removing distractions, whatever that might be, if it's helping to usher new families into to finding a seat, if it's whatever it might be, how can we help remove any distractions so that God's people can worship with joy on a Sunday morning?
That's a good word. And I do think we said in an earlier podcast, maybe your deacon and his wife could be sort of the ones that look across the congregation. And when they see someone that they don't know or don't recognize that might be new, that's their cue to get up and move and go sit by those new people.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
not make them uncomfortable and not give them the, you know, the 100 questions, but just say, hey, my name is Greg. This is my wife, Janice. Glad you're here. Mm-hmm. And then just worship standing next to them.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things, one of the ways a deacon can do that for absolute certain.
Yep.
Another way is a deacon can do that, and I've seen it happen here at Linwood. Sometimes there's some really elderly people who come to church, and it's a little hard for them maybe to get out of their car to walk in.
Exactly.
And have some deacons make it their job to go out, open the door for them, help them walk in. If they've got a walker, help them with the walker. Help them find a seat.
Yes.
If in communion, if during communion, if you people walk up and take communion, make sure you've got some deacons who are aware enough that their job is to take communion to people who really can't walk up to the front and take communion. Just to be aware, how can I serve not only the young families who come in, the new families who come in, but even the older ones who might need some special care and some special attention, helping to get in the building and get out and those kinds of things.
I love that. That's so good. So in review here, number one, deacons are the lead servants of the church. Number two, they joyfully assist the pastors. Number three, they help to facilitate God-honoring worship. Here's number four, deacons help the poor, broken, and needy. And here we're talking about benevolence ministry. And that's so important. What does that look like for you in churches that you've served in the past?
Boy, deacons... that we can do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah.
All right.
I know it's a huge topic.
It is a huge topic. And okay, first of all, we need to care for those in our flock.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a church member in your flock who has a benevolent need and he is a member of your church, you got to meet that need.
Yeah.
If for some reason something happens and they've gotten behind on their utilities or they've lost their job for a while or they've made some or they're living on the edge and their car engine blows up or they need a new set of tires, man, we've got to be gracious. The New Testament shows us we share things in common.
That's right.
We need to be benevolent with those in our congregation. Many times churches will take a benevolent offering at communion.
Yeah.
Not always, but a lot of times. Yep. And that's a good thing to do. That that creates an account. But you also ought to put some of your regular tithes and offerings into a benevolent account. And I really think that, I guess people could push back on me on this, but I don't believe you can. You can, but I don't believe you're right.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the first and foremost thing we do is we got to make sure the benevolent needs within our church family are met.
Okay. And that would also include, obviously, orphans and widows.
I'm going to go way out on a limb here.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, since this is a, I don't know how many people listen to this podcast, but maybe we're about to find out here.
Oh boy, here we go. I feel like we need a drum, some kind of like.
I'm going to get a lot of pushback on this. I'm really going to get a pushback on this.
Be careful, pal.
But I actually believe it. You know, people always say, when you've done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me, right? So people use that to say, well, you know, clearly we have to care for the poor. I mean, how many times, if you've listened to me for 10 years, have I said, those who've been dealt generously with should be the most generous people in the community?
Mm-hmm.
And our mission statement here at Linwood is that we exist to make the community noticeably better. So we feed people, we care for people, we do all we can for people outside the congregation. So we're not selfish with that. But when Jesus said, when you fail to do it to the least of these, you fail to do it to me. I was sick. Mm-hmm. I was in prison.
Yeah.
He's talking about brothers and sisters in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying is, because back in those days, if you were going to be arrested for following Christ, you would go to prison. They weren't going to feed you in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had to bring you food in prison.
Yeah.
And if you bought food to that person in prison, you would be identified as someone that identified with him.
Wow.
And you might be put in prison.
Right.
And I think Jesus is saying is, look, among our own, among your own body, if you don't care for the least among your own body, you're not even caring for me. Mm. And so I think it's a real commitment that the world would see that Christians care deeply and don't let any of their own body suffer. And I think, I really think that he's talking about when you do the least of these, he means in my own, in our own church family.
Yeah, that's good.
And that, now, clearly we help the poor, we do other things.
Outside
so
the body
my point
as well.
Is, as deacons, our first commitment has to be for the benevolent needs in our own church family. Now, what about benevolent needs outside the church family? Well, when I was at Warnell in Kansas City, we were in an urban setting, and it became pretty obvious that, again, to a point to where every day I had people come into my church wanting money, every day. First of all, I didn't like to lock the church doors. I just, you probably should. You ought to in most places. I get that. I just didn't like it. It just bothered me. So I would be in my office, and I'd look up, and there would be somebody standing there. And so the first thing I would do is I knew enough not to get cornered. And they'd say, can you have some time? I said, yeah, I do. But I was just walking outside to get something out of my car. Will you come with me? So I would get them outside the building. I wanted to be outside in the parking lot where people could see us. I didn't want to be in the, so they would follow me outside the building. That happened. That worked every single time. So I'd get out there and I'd say, now, what can I help you with? Well, I need some money. Well, okay. And usually it was something like, I need $39.82 because I need to take a bus to Jefferson City because my mother's having surgery and I've got everything but $39.22 and the bus leaves in 2 hours and I need $39.22. And, you know, I would say, and I'm not going to give you $39.22. We got some food here. I'll give you some food, but I'm not going to give any money. And sometimes they would get pretty irate with me. And I'd say, look, I'm sorry. Do you see, I actually said this. I said, do you see an ATM anywhere here on this property? You don't come to a church to just get money out of a church. That's not what we do. If you want help with your life, if you want to help getting a job, if you need something to eat right now, we're here for you. If you just want me to give you $40, we are not here for you. Now, that can seem harsh, but after I did that two or three times, I never got people coming asking for money again because I believe the word got out there that that's a dry hole. You're not getting cash there anymore. And I do think there are times you have to be wise about that. Now, every week, our guys would come together at church, make some great meals, put them in styrofoam containers, drive to the homeless camps, and pass out that food. We would gather socks for homeless and give them to homeless. We raised all kinds of money for the victims, families of murder victims, and all. We did all kinds of things like that. But just handing out cash to people who show up is not wise and not helpful.
That's right.
But in terms of benevolence, the first benevolence you need to take care of are those among your church.
We have there's a book that we have posted in the show notes called On Being a Deacon. And one of the things I would point you to in the back of that book as an appendix is a benevolence form that your deacons can use to fill out with someone who needs help and assistance. And what we found is there has to be accountability. There's got to be, what are we really talking about here? And so anyway, that's a resource to help you as you're thinking through, man, how do we, you know, distinguish between legit financial needs and those that maybe aren't as legit? Those within our church versus those outside of our church. So anyway, just point you to that as a resource because it takes wisdom. It takes wisdom.
If you're in that kind of church where that kind of thing happens all the time, have some food available. Have some food bars and some food available. Have a sack or a box of food available. Anybody that comes and asks for money, say, look, I can't help you with that. And here is some food if you'd like to have some. Have some diapers available. Here's some diapers. Here's some formula. We want to help you with that.
Yeah, that's good.
That kind of thing. You may even want to have a gas card and you can get them some gas to put them on their way or whatever, but never give them cash money. And when it comes to utilities, we get used to get calls all the time from people saying, you know, my utilities have been cut off. Can you help me with that? We did it a few times to people, and I was then informed by some of the nonprofits in Kansas City that that was really a it was a scam. and that money was not really being used properly. And so I think at that point, you just have to work with the different nonprofits in your city who help people with things like that and say, you know, we really can't help. And now, but if you know them, if they're a member of your church, if they're a sister or a brother of a member of your church, if they're a close friend of a member of your church, then you help them.
That's good.
So I, that in terms of deacons of benevolence, that's, and we hear one last thing, and I know we got to hurry because Kyle says we're out of time. One of the ways we set up our deacons at Warnell was, we did one deacon might be responsible for internal benevolence, one for external benevolence,
I like that. That's great.
One for hospital visitation, one for bereavement of families, and how you help them arrange the funeral and provide the meal and those kinds of things. So we sort of had some leadership in some specific areas.
I love that.
So we could point to them and say, yeah, Carl, you're in charge of internal benevolence and the external benevolence, bereavement, hospital visitation. We even had another one that was for some family crises,
those
kinds of things. So they kind of specialized, and so they knew kind of how to handle those situations.
A clear role. I love that. Okay, so let me just review. So duties of a deacon. Number one, deacons are the lead servants of the church. Number two, they joyfully assist the pastors. Number three, they help facilitate God-honoring worship. Number four, deacons help the poor and the broken and the needy, benevolence needs. And then the fifth one, we won't say much about this, but deacons mobilize others to serve. And I just want to say this. One of the joys that I've had as a pastor is seeing deacons raise up other deacons, seeing deacons set up model. We have a program at our church called Junior Deacons.
Oh, I love it.
And how to get the next generation of kiddos involved in serving the church and the joy of serving. And so again, mobilizing others to serve. At the end of the day, though, here's what we know. Deacons are really, really important.
Yes.
They're really important, and we see that in the New Testament church. And boy, I just want to encourage you, Pastor, it is worth the time and the energy to do this right and have a vision for deacons, to mobilize them, to raise them up, to encourage them, to unleash them, to serve your church.
How much time do we have left? Are we over time? Because if we go over 20 minutes, it starts costing us. NAM bills us. $10 for every minute we're over.
Hey, so you're the boss, Bob.
Are we over? Because one of the things I would like to talk about, but we can't now because we've already lost all of our listeners. I would like to talk about deacon rotation.
Yeah, talk about it.
Are you once a deacon and always a deacon?
Ah.
Do you get to like rotate off for 3 years and another deacon come on? My growing up in the 60s and even 70s was you didn't ever rotate off. You were a deacon.
Yeah.
You just
deacon for life.
You were
That's
deacon
you
for
were.
Life.
You were ordained as a deacon. And did you guys ordain deacons?
We ordained deacons. Yep. You were ordained as a deacon. You were deacon for life. You didn't ever become inactive. And you know, as they grew older, you might take some of the responsibilities away because they're infirm.
Right.
But they were always a deacon.
Yeah.
Could come to the meetings, always a deacon. Mm-hmm. And then you might replace them with some younger ones who could be more active.
Yep.
But I remember the first time I was a young teenager and I was heard about a church where said, well, he's an inactive deacon. And I thought, what's an inactive deacon? Well, we rotate off every 3 years and you take a rest. I'm thinking, and I know some of you are going to get upset with me because you do this and you think it's the right thing to do. And maybe it is. It just seems odd to me that if you're called to be a deacon, you're going to take 3 years and not deacon. And then I'm going to come back and deacon again, then take 3 years and not deacon. I don't quite understand that.
I agree with you. I think that's where in our church it's the same thing with the office of pastor elder.
I mean,
when you ordain. I do think this. I think what is healthy is having a rhythm in place of sabbaticals, of times of rest for your deacons.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, but that's different.
That's different.
Than saying you're not a deacon anymore.
Right. You're 3 years off.
Yeah.
Now I've had occasion where our leaders met with one of them and said, look, we sense some things in your life right now that this is really not something you need to be doing right now.
Yep.
And so we would like you to take 3 months, 4 months, and take some time and come back.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than a rotation.
Yeah, it is.
Where I'm on for 3 years and then I'm off for three years.
Yep.
Or I'm on for 4 years and off for 2 years.
That's right.
So I do think there are times that we might need to increase. And there are times that deacons might need to resign.
Yep.
And say, look, I got to take, my wife has gotten ill. My job has changed.
I can't serve in this role.
There's no problem with that.
Yeah, right.
I'm just personally not comfortable with rotation of deacons.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to kind of, in my mind, a little bit devalued. value the role. Because I think a deacon is really up there with an elder and a pastor. And you just, sabbaticals are important for elders and pastors.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So sabbaticals would be important for deacons. Yep. I don't have a problem with that. Yep. But the other, okay.
That's just good, man.
Throw
that's
that in
thoughts.
There. Yep. All right. That's extra.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.